Hello, JR. Well, hello.
Oh, I say, have you been recording with some English people?
English people, yes, I'm recording with English people now.
You're listening to the Blue Box Podcast, and for the next 60 minutes, we're going to be talking about Doctor Who. That doesn't exist, so that you don't have to. Hi, I'm JR.
Hi, I'm Stephen.
I am Tim, also known as Eric the Halfabee.
And the reason we are here convened is because it's, well, it's been 2 years, just over 2 years since Enemy of the World and the Web of Fear were handed back to the BBC. Nearly 2 years, I suppose, if you're rounding up, since they were released. And there are a lot of questions out there as to why we've not heard anything more yet. And a lot of those questions have been directed at me and the podcast, saying, why don't you do a podcast about it, about the rumours and about why we haven't heard, etc. And because I've not written about it for Starburst in well over a year, and because we've not done a podcast about it since that one that you and I, Stephen, did with Josh and Mark, which is, God, to be 18 months ago, I thought, why not? Let's sit down and talk about it. So the reason Tim is here is because, the three of us chat quite often about all the various different rumours that are going around. And so I thought it would be nice for the three of us to have that conversation that we normally have wherever we normally have it, whether that be on Facebook or where else, here in front of the microphones for people to listen to. And so if they don't like it, well, it's their fault for asking for it.
Well, it's very nice of you to pluck me from complete obscurity to minor obscurity. That's very kind of you, JR.
Yeah, but Tim, you are, well, I mean, I there are loads of people who I talk to about, you know, the missing episodes, both, you know, on the forums and, you know, people who send me private messages and such. But you and Stephen must be the two I talk to most often. And I think the three of us, we don't agree on everything. We should say that before we start, in case people think I've lined the pair of you up so that we can just say, you know, whatever message it is we've got to put out there. We don't agree about everything, but we generally, between the three of us, I think, tend to have the most interesting conversations where we thrash out what might be the reasons for this, that, and the other. So that's probably the reason why I thought it would be good to have you two here. Look, before we get into various different things, because I mean, there's nearly 2 years worth of there's more than 2 years worth of stuff. There's nearly 10 years worth of stuff to talk about, really. But before we get into all that, well, we should lay our cards on the table. Do you believe, as an opening question, do you believe there's more Doctor Who to come? If so, in a nutshell, do you think there is a good reason why we've not heard of it yet? And if not, why not? And then we'll get into the nitty-gritty and start getting down to details. Stephen, then, do you believe there's more? And if so, and if not, why?
I'm an optimist, but I'm also a realist. But I do believe there is more to come. If only just based on what people in the positions, you know, like people like Steve Roberts and others who don't seem to be that discouraged by any lack of development, but they just sort of seem to be not in the know, but just sort of suspecting that there is more to come. And just the amount of, I mean, we'll probably get into this, but, you know, Philip Morris hasn't handed anything back in 2 years. But if he was a hoaxer, for instance, I don't think he'd be in the public eye as much, and you know, yeah. and working behind the scenes to actually, I mean, if he's doing a hoax, he's going a hell of a long way to perpetuate this hoax. So it's those elements that are kind of, and I have a couple other theories that I'm sure we'll get into. What I think is why they aren't back yet. But yeah, I think I'm in the positive camp, but I'm also not susceptible to wild speculation. You two cats have been on the forums. I have not been on the forums in 2 years, so I don't know what's going on there. But in my opinion, I don't care what's going on there, because I don't think anything new is coming from the forums.
You know, the reason I, just to go off on a quick side one, the reason I stay on the forums, one particular forum, is because last time, there were all these rumors going around last time, but there's a trigger. There's a trigger where you suddenly realize, okay, it's happening, as opposed to people are just talking about it happening. And I think one of the reasons why I stay on the forums is because I think if there's going to be a trigger coming, it's not going to be a private message from Stephen Roberts saying, hey, guess what I'm restoring currently? If there's going to be a trigger to sort of tip you off that things are in motion again, it's going to be some bizarre, random thing that just happens to get reported on a forum somewhere, I think, possibly. Anyway, Tim, do you believe in more? And would you like to explain the reason for your belief?
I do. I think if you go before, well, what I've done as a relative newcomer to the forums is I came along in maybe March 2013 when the Doctor Who Online pre-announcement tweet or whatever it was happened. Yeah. And so I'm new to the forums, but I've sort of followed it since then, and there was a real air of expectancy, wasn't there?
Oh, definitely.
But what I've been able to do is talk to people and find out what they heard going back before that. And when you sort of plot it all out and timeline it all out, it just seems to me that these rumours make sense, that they follow a logical sort of order. And the deeper you dig, it all tends to make sense. So really it's because of what happened before the forums got a hold of it that I believe. Just going back to something that Stephen said, one of the difficulties in believing all this is, and we'll probably get into it later, I don't know, but Stephen said he believes that there's more to come because Phil Morris is still in the public eye. But there's a little bit of a contradiction there, isn't there? Because he's kept himself in the public eye, and yet one of the reasons he said that we don't have any more yet is because being in the public eye has sort of, I don't know, slowed him down or made things less difficult. It was more difficult to continue the search, wasn't it? Because his face was everywhere. So that's a real contradiction in my head. But yeah, overall, certainly, I think there's just too much noise, if you like. There's too much smoke.
For there not to be any fire.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, in that case, actually, on the subject of Phil keeping himself in the public eye, it's my contention that other people are keeping him in the public eye. He's just not very good.
That's true.
Or not very bothered about not letting it happen. Because if you look at it, I was going to get into this more later, but why not? If you look at it, it's very rare. People complain about, he says, expect the unexpected, and we've been expecting it for 2 years, and it's not turned up. And he says, the wind's blowing in the right direction. And what kind of wind is that, Phil? The wind that comes out of your ass? People keep... But the point is, he only ever posts expect the unexpected or the wind is blowing in the right direction in response to somebody having asked him a question. And most of the things he goes on Twitter or Facebook to talk about are prompted by questions or criticisms or accusations that are levelled in his direction. He very rarely actually seems to me to go out of his way to put himself there, but he doesn't seem that bothered nowadays about... you know, not being out there, does he? I think that's the slight distinction.
He's been on he's been on BBC Breakfast. He's been on BBC Radio 5 Live, hasn't he? Which doesn't seem to be a man trying to keep completely out of public view. as was very much the case before the Enemy and Webb reveal.
Yeah, actually, the one thing that changed, because it was during 2013, or it was since 2013, but talking about 2013 when he said that he didn't want to be in the public eye. And I suppose the one thing that's changed, when I, because we're obviously going to talk about this, but when I interviewed him, he said that his focus was changing, didn't he? You've both heard the interview, and you've both read various things I've said about it. He said his focus was changing from the archives to what he described as, you know, episodes that might be in people's attics. In other words, episodes that aren't still in the archives, but that have ended up in other places, wherever that may be. And possibly one thing that's changed is while he was working in the archives, maybe he didn't want people necessarily to know who he was because it was easier for him to get him and do get in and do the job if they just thought of him as the archive guy rather than the guy who's collecting stuff. But if he's not working in archives anymore, maybe actually it's helpful if he's looking in people's attics. If people are thinking, right, here's the guy who looks in your attics. Let's see if I've got anything there that he might want. I guess.
Yeah.
That could be. And if that's the case, then if you're looking in attics, then you're near the end of a search rather than at the beginning, because you're looking at where things might have wandered off to as opposed to what the source of things might be.
Exactly. And also, you know, I say attics and I'm being a bit disingenuous because you could mean anywhere. You know, say for a random example, a film school somewhere in some university somewhere in the country asked the BBC, have you got examples of episodes that we can show to our students to show how television works? And, you know, Leicester University might have a copy of all 12 episodes of the Daleks Master Plan, for all we know. That's kind of what Phil meant by attics. He meant anywhere outside of the archives where episodes could have ended up, really, doesn't he?
It does. And I mean, I work in TV, not like production-wise or anything like that, but like in the offices and stuff and on my desk. Like, basically, I order... or have ordered. It's mostly digital now, but I used to order like HD cam and Digibeta tapes containing movies and TV shows. And sometimes those studios, in between us airing them and us having like paid them, go bankrupt or get sold out to other larger companies or something like that. And suddenly I'm stuck with these videotapes of movies that we don't own because we've only loaned them as part of the contract, but I no longer have an address to ship them to. So they just sit on my desk. You know, I have a few tapes on my desk that are just sitting there. I've tried to contact the original person, but they've, you know, that email address is no longer valid because the company's no longer valid. And so, you know, these things can turn up anywhere. You know, we aired it once or something like that, but it could have aired elsewhere, and it just sort of lands on my desk, even though we haven't aired it in many years. So there's lots of different places like that, be it attics, be it TV stations, be it schools or whatever, that these things could have turned up at.
Indeed. I didn't say what my belief is, which is I suppose I should have added in at the start, shouldn't I? I'm exactly the same place as you guys. I don't think there's this much smoke without there being at least some fire. And of course, if there was nothing else, it would have been so easy for Phil to turn around and say, look, I've not found anything yet, but I'm hoping to. And he's never actually said, I've not found anything yet, but I'm hoping to. He said on many occasions, I'm hoping to. But he's never prefaced it with, I've not found anything yet. Which I get the impression with Phil, and with people like Paul Venezis and Steve Roberts and all of the others, I get the impression they don't like not telling the truth, but sometimes it's something that they just have to do, either by phrasing things carefully so as not to give things away. And I suppose we'll talk in a minute about reasons why people might not be allowed to talk about stuff. But, you know, where I'm going with this is, if Phil had not found anything, I'm sure he would have found it a lot easier to say that than if there's more to come. So my belief is that there's definitely more. Now, whether that includes any Doctor Who or a lot of Doctor Who or some Doctor Who, I wouldn't like to put my finger from one day to the next on where my belief is quite with that. But I am definitely... more a believer in more Doctor Who than the opposite, if that makes sense. Now, the other thing is, and Tim, you'll know more about this than Stephen will, one of the weird things
that's happened... thanks a lot.
Well, because this is a forum thing, really, but over the last couple of years, or 18 months, however long, since the announcement, I think when the announcement came, because people had heard the rumours of 90, I think what people were thinking was, oh, this is the start, and there's going to be a big snowball, and, you know, within 6 months, there'll be only six Doctor Who episodes missing, or something ridiculous like that, and they'll all be back by the middle of 2014. Right. When that announcement came, I thought then, and I still believe now, and I've said it to everybody who's asked me in the meantime, that it would probably be something like 2 years at least before there'd be a second announcement, because if nothing else, the search is still going on. And negotiations for these kinds of things must be very complicated. Two stories, not so very tricky, seeing as they're both from the same series. But if Phil Morris has got episodes of this series, that series, and the other series, and they belong to the BBC and ITV and ITC and whoever knows what else, that's not going to be so simple to sort out. So I always thought there was going to be a considerable amount of time before another announcement came along. But the fact that there hasn't been another announcement in 18 months seems to have caused stir craziness on the forums. And, you know, this near universal belief in 90 episodes that we all had in the spring of 2013 has turned into, now if you believe there's any more episodes, you're seen as something of a loony.
Yeah, indeed, yeah. Yeah. Well, I think there's a few contradictions at play, aren't there? If he's still searching, then would he still be? I mean, at one point it was rumored that he had the lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
At one point it was said that he has every single missing episode. God knows how many copies of Feast of Stephen he was supposed to have.
But it was rumored he had quite a few episodes. Yeah, exactly.
And it is a little, you know, sort of just a little voice in my ear that says, well, if he's still searching, which he is, would he really be searching so hard if he was only 16 to go?
Exactly. And if he had none to go, why would he still be searching at all? I mean, obviously, there's the secondary thing about other TV programmes. But you'd have to assume that if he had indeed found every single missing Doctor Who, then he'd probably have pretty much found every single missing anything as well, wouldn't he?
Yeah.
While he was looking.
It depends on how you read what his sort of mission is.
Yeah, I guess it
does. Because he's supposed to have started off looking for Doctor Who, but he often talks about not only, but also... and he seems to have become a little bit more sort of, he's got a mission to find missing television than perhaps when he started out. But it's not really a very happy marriage of him searching everywhere still and carrying on. And he talked about South America, didn't he, and audition prints and so on. So it's not really a very, it doesn't sit comfortably with me, the idea of him having nearly everything and yet still flying off to Timbuktu or wherever, you know, to working this hard. But maybe that's how he's wired. I don't know.
Yeah, you know, that was one of the things that impressed me about him when I met him, is that he seemed to have... He's one of these very strong-willed, single-minded, determined characters who... the kind of person who, if they get an idea in their head and they decide to do something, then they will carry that through regardless of what happens in the meantime. And if, you know, this is another... We talk about the various different reasons why there may be delays. And I want to talk in a minute about what the word delays actually means. But we talk about why there may be reasons for delays, but maybe one of the reasons is, he said to himself when he started, I'm going to devote 10 years to this project and I'm going to look in X number of places, and I'm not going to leave any stone unturned in the meantime. And if it goes to longer than 10 years, fair enough. But, you know, if it comes in shorter than 10 years, then fair enough too. But if he sets himself a target of something in the region of 10 years and not to leave any stone unturned, I can't see him stopping until he does. Not that kind of person.
I have, No, but I also have a theory as to what the delay might be, and this both ties into my TV experience, and it's also a theory that was suggested by, which kind of validated my own theory, by Steve Roberts in a conversation I had with him at Gallifrey One this past year in 2015.
Ooh, go
and
ahead.
And it's this. It's, well, I've often championed this, and so when I heard Steve talk about the same thing, you know, independently of what I was thinking, it made me feel good. Because basically in TV, what we sometimes when we buy packages or we buy a movie, for instance, like a top-notch blockbuster movie from, say, Fox or something like that, they would often throw in a couple of lesser movies, be it failed pilots turned into movies or you know, less lowlights kind of thing.
Yeah,
basically,
yeah.
It's a way of recouping some money from these sort of failed or less successful projects. And so when you buy one movie, you have to buy in a package with these three or four other lesser wanted movies. And what I think is happening is this. Is that perhaps Phil Morris has found a lot of Doctor Who, but of course, as we know, he's found this on his own time and own money,
yes,
and own personal strife too. There's a lot of dangerous situations that he's been into, and he's probably found other stuff as well as Doctor Who. And he's what I think is happening here. This is just a theory, is that some of the stuff, unfortunately, is while interest of for archive television and historical nature like that is not marketable. You know, there might be some old TV shows that you couldn't necessarily sell as a box set or something like that. I'm not going to name names because I don't know names of missing television shows. What if they found, you know, Sky at Night will say, you're not going to really find much Sky at Night box set demand out there, for instance. So it's only interest for archivists, and therefore it cannot be, you know, it can't be marketed. Money cannot be made from it. So I think what Phil Morris is doing, again, speculation, is that he's found a lot of Doctor Who, but he's trying to get a whole package of stuff together so that he can sell the entire thing back to BBC, therefore recoup some of his money from the stuff that is not marketable. Because if he went up to the BBC and said, hey, look at this, I found 60 episodes of The Sky at Night, give me money for them, or BBC Worldwide, BBC Worldwide can't make money off that.
We'll talk about the charter in a second, because I think that's quite a big point to make about how
there's
that
probably
works.
That there too. Yeah. So, in my opinion, I think he's scouring the globe to find as much as he can to sort of sell back to the BBC in one giant package and make his money back that way, which is probably leading to the delay. Again, a theory, speculation, but I think that's one that has some merit.
And if there's any truth in that, sorry, Tim, go on.
No, I was just going to say one of the worries for me is I think people grossly overestimate the commercial value of even Doctor Who. I mean, we're not talking about a lot of DVD sales relative to a large investment by the BBC. So why on earth would they want to spend a lot of money on, frankly, forgotten and unloved and uncared for archive television?
Well, exactly.
A lot of it has absolutely zero commercial potential. That's a bit of a worry.
Yeah, even if people are talking about the launch of the BBC Digital Store, which is going to be presumably in the autumn, it's obviously taking longer than they'd really hoped for to get it up and running, but it looks like it's going to be in the autumn. People are talking about that, but if you put up, say you had, there are currently something like, two, I think. Are those the only two old Sky at Nights? The ones that Phil found that still exist from the 60s or 70s. Even if you had 60 of those, if you put 60 of them up on the BBC store and charge people 99p or £1.99 or whatever, even 99p or 49p to download them, those 60 episodes, they're not going to get downloaded by an awful lot of people. Barely any at all. We're talking possibly single figures and certainly not above double figures. They're not going to make any money. So you're right. If Phil has presumably, because he's been out there for, we don't know quite when it started, and we do know that he's still out there now, but we don't know quite how much time he's spent out there and how much time in between he's spent at home. But certainly there's been a lot of time spent abroad for Phil in the last 10 years, presumably meaning that even in terms of simply his expenditure, we're talking tens of thousands of pounds. And if you also take into account time, as in how much money would he have been able to earn in a wage if he had had a proper job for those 10 years, you know, if we were to factor that in as well, you're talking hundreds of thousands of pounds that Phil Morris has expended upon this search. And people on the forums or elsewhere will say things like, oh, if he's got 90 Doctor Who episodes, that's going to be worth millions to him. No, it's not going to be worth millions to the BBC, let alone, you know, whatever portion of those revenues they would be able to divide off for Phil. So they're not worth anything like that much. And that's the Doctor Who. That's the big one. That's the popular one. I mean, even if he found, even if he'd managed to find the three missing episodes of Dad's Army, that's just three episodes. So even if even if individually those three episodes of Dad's Army were to be sold or seen by more people than any of the Doctor Who stories he found, that's still just three episodes. So it's not like whatever he may have found is the motherlode that's going to earn him or the BBC a fortune. But the way the BBC charter works prohibits the BBC, even BBC Worldwide, from spending money indiscriminately. The BBC as a central organisation, BBC itself, has to, if you're going to spend anything at all that's not straightforward on programming, you've got to run it by the Board of Governors so that they can say, yes, that's a wise use of the public money, or no, it's not. So if Phil Morris were to come to the BBC as, you know, the general organisation and say, look, I have found this amount of material that you have had missing from your archives for X amount of years, the BBC are either going to say, well, you can give it to us, but we can't give you anything in return, or they're going to say, right, obviously, you've spent hundreds of thousands of pounds, in essence, finding this stuff. We can't give you hundreds of thousands of pounds, and before we can even give you a penny, we have to run it by the Board of Governors. So this is where BBC Worldwide comes in. BBC Worldwide works slightly differently, but, and I think all three of us know about this, BBC Worldwide work under a system whereby every penny that they spend out has to be tailored to a specific revenue stream that they believe will be guaranteed to bring money back in. In other words, just taking the Doctor Who DVD range, for example, if they spend money on extras for the Doctor Who DVD range, those extras have to be budgeted against specific Doctor Who stories with which they will be released upon, and those specific Doctor Who stories have to be considered as ones that will bring in revenue that will not only cover those costs but also turn a profit. For example, and this came up in the latest issue of Doctor Who magazine, Time and the Rani. The people in charge of the Time and the Rani DVD saw that they had two discs worth of material, or could have had two discs worth of material if they had budgeted to buy in that amount of material. But they looked at the release and they said, this is not going to sell as many copies as a Tom Baker story would. We can't justify the budget. We're going to have to keep it to a single disc. So there's an example within a range that is selling in fairly standard numbers to fans. There's kind of a minimal cut-off point below which Doctor Who DVDs tend not to fall, even when they're really unpopular black and white stories like The Censorites, say, for example. So they know they have a kind of a minimum revenue stream coming in from each of those DVDs, but they still have to justify every item of value-added material against the release that it is figured to be going on and how much revenue that specific release can be predicted to bring in. So when you come to Phil Morris and what he might have found, the situation thereby is, if he's found 90, let's say he's found 30. Let's say he's found 30 Doctor Who episodes, and there are four complete stories and half a dozen orphan episodes. The BBC, if they're going to pay him a finder's fee, even through BBC Worldwide, have to justify each episode that they pay money for. And if they're going to buy it as a bulk package, they still have to justify that bulk package as, you know, a predicted revenue stream that will cover its costs and turn a profit. But so in the most Jobsworth sort of view of that situation, if he had found all four episodes of The Massacre and one episode of The Celestial Toymaker, BBC Worldwide could justify paying him a finder's fee for the four episodes of The Massacre, but The Celestial Toymaker, with two episodes, wouldn't be complete enough to release as a standalone DVD, so the BBC would have to say, but I'm sorry, we can't afford to pay you any money for The Celestial Toymaker. You'll have to keep it, we won't have it. And while obviously that wouldn't happen with Doctor Who, in the wider picture, if Phil has found a whole load of stuff and he has spent, you know, the kind of money that we're talking about getting this stuff, where is the revenue stream going to come from that will have made it worth his while? Because let's face it, any businessman is not going to do that purely out of charity. They are going to want to see some of that money back. And sorry for hogging it for 10 minutes, but guys, what do you think of all that? Tim, seeing as you were on the subject of that thing.
Well, I think there's a bit of a plan B there, potentially, for him, in that these films, especially if they're missing films and if the BBC aren't interested, will go for a substantial amount of money privately. There was an episode of, was it Softly Softly, on eBay in the last week that went for £700. And so I don't know the legalities. I know you can't copy it, but there's potentially another way of getting rid of some of the less desirable stuff if the BBC won't take it. But I think I also think there's another a really glaring sort of potential problem for delays. He was in Zambia in 2008. Now Zambia have employed someone to digitize their archives today, so they're still going. So we're now 2015, so 7 years later there is still work going on there. He was in Nigeria. Well, I think if I had to hazard a guess, I'd say that Enemy and Webb were found in 2010 2011, and still in, I think it was late 2014, he said he was still working in Nigeria on this project. Genesis, presumably. So who knows at what point in his contracts with whichever archive, not to say that they're all the same, who's to say at what point he can sort of grab the stuff and
walk out the door. That's a very good point.
I was just going to say, I'm not really answering your point about the commerciality of it or whatever, but I think that's another factor into, he's a guy who's going to get the job done, and he's a sort of seal it with a handshake sort of bloke, and he's going to do what he said he'll do in whichever archive, and no two archives will have the same arrangement.
And on that exact point, he's the kind of guy who will do whatever it takes to get it done. And if he turns up some archive, if he were to turn up at some archive and they'd say, look, we don't need any work done, but look, here's some British stuff that we've had sitting here for the last 40 years, help yourself. He'll shake that and say, thanks very much, that's great. If, if on the other hand, there's some archive that says, look, there's a bunch of British stuff sitting in the corner there, but we need this huge amount of work doing on our archive. And as soon as you've offered, we'd like you to do all this work, and then you can have that stuff. Mm-hmm. So there will be, like Tim says, it will vary probably from one place to another, whether that be archives or whatever else, you know, the metaphorical attics that we were talking about before, because nobody gets anything for nothing in this life. But Phil's the kind of person who, once set that specific challenge, he is going to do that. And, you know, for all the frustration that we've felt across the last 2 years about having heard all these rumours and still not knowing whether they're true or not, can you imagine? Now, here's the thing. Doctor Who Online. Yes, Doctor Who Online. rumoured back in 2007, wasn't it, that the Web of Fear had been found.
Yeah.
Now, we three are pretty sure that Phil Morris didn't recover the Web of Fear in 2007. We think it was probably late 2010 or early 2011, I think, collectively, between the three of us. And we can perhaps go into why in a minute. But So imagine a situation whereby Phil works out what archive the Web of Fear is in. And I'm not saying this is specifically what happened in this case, but I'm putting this forward as a what if. So imagine any one of the other missing stories, say the massacre, since I mentioned it a minute ago. Imagine Phil walks into an archive in 2007 and he sees a copy of the massacre on the shelf. But the people who run that archive say, you know what, we don't need any work doing, so thanks very much, go home. Now, Phil turns around and now he's standing outside the archive with no way of getting back into the archive. It's 2007 and he knows the massacre is in there. He also knows that if he's not careful, those people in the archive will work out that that's what he really came for and will either sell it on to somebody else to make a bit of money themselves or else throw it in the bin like they were supposed to in the first place if they haven't worked out that the reason he's come for it is not to throw it in the bin himself. So not only does he know the massacre's there and it's locked away in this archive, but he also knows that if he doesn't play it very carefully, it's either going to disappear altogether or become destroyed. So, as frustrating as we might have found the last 2 years, or however long it is since we first heard these rumours, I mean, do either of you agree that the job that Phil's been doing for the last 10 years must, in many, many occasions, have been pretty much as frustrating as I've probably just described, you know, or in that sort of ballpark? Do you think that's a likelihood? Tim? Stephen? Stephen, go on.
Stephen.
I think so, because, I mean, it's not like, you know, the story, as the story goes, he just turned up at that Joss station and says, oh, look, there's, you know, 9 episodes of Doctor Who just sitting on the shelf here. Can I take these? It's never, ever that easy. You know, there is always red tape and paperwork and, you know, and flying to Africa in the first place. And I should hope to think that he's not just sort of cold calling these places and just sort of booking flights to Zambia and, you know, just on the off chance that there might be something in the archive, because that would be ludicrous. So there's the research going on as well as where these things might actually be happening and, might, you know, trying to get it, gain a way in, because it's not like, you know, someone is knocking on the door of the TV station that I work at saying, hey, I understand that you have this old videotape here. Can I take it? It's like, I don't even know you. Why would I give this tape to you?
Yeah.
We've never dealt with each other at all. So there's that aspect of things too. So yeah, it must be remarkably frustrating. And he's just, you know, and this is why I think he incorporated, there's two reasons why I think he incorporated as TIA, Television International Enterprises Archives. A, because it gives him some, a letterhead to go in under any of these places, especially when he's hopefully searching for film cans from the original Television International Enterprises. But also, it's a way to get, I think anyway, it's, you know, no longer is he sort of like the BBC Worldwide is, and maybe the BFI are like just paying some guy from Wigan. They're actually paying money to an established corporation. So there's a money trail there as well. And I think, and that only happened in March of 2011. So I imagine that, you know, for the 3 or 4 years that he was actually searching before that, just as Phil Morris, perhaps the letter from the BBC and the BBFI, it's probably a little bit easier once he actually had a company name.
Yeah, absolutely. Tim, what do you think?
It's a hell of a clunky name, isn't it?
It is.
It is a little bit.
International Enterprises Archives. I wonder if there's more to that.
But if it opens doors, it opens doors, I guess.
If it opens doors, it opens doors. Yeah.
And you know, if
it's a hell of a clunky name.
Yeah. But I mean, if he did, name it deliberately after the original company in order to, you know, perhaps not necessarily impersonate that original company, but, you know, try and get some of that original company's legacy to rub off on what he was trying to do in terms of being able to walk into places and say, look, there's that and I'm this. Now put two and two together and give me your episodes. If that happened, if that's what he did, I don't care. Yeah. I've still got the Enemy of the World and the Web of Fear sitting behind me. Yeah.
Yeah, me neither, but I doubt there are archivists set in Zambia who are, you know, harking back to the halcyon days of Television International Enterprises.
No.
And then he'll rock up with his tier name and say, oh, yeah, wow, how are you? Good to see you. I don't think so.
But then on the other hand, you know, he talked in the interview and he's spoken about, you know, going to archives and then, you know, greeting him at the door saying, right, yes, we have heard of you. We've heard what you did down the road in, you know, whatever other country, Ghana or somewhere. Yeah. So please come in and, you know, see what you can do for us. So, you know, even if that company name was chosen with not necessarily, well, you know, with the best of intentions, but not necessarily, you know, with the most legitimate of intentions. Even if that happened back in the very first place, I don't think it was solely and has continued to be only because of that. Well, you know, it's the company itself, I think, that became the legitimacy that he had when he was on the road. Sorry, go on.
I mean, what's quite interesting is that he was searching from 2005, 2006 through to 2009, and he had no joy. I think in the interview with you, he talked about we were on the wrong track.
Yeah, yeah.
And then all of a sudden, it becomes a very good idea to create this tier company. And I think he registered it officially in 2011. Might have been 10.
March 17th, 2011. I remember the day. So
hey,
I have a thing with dates.
I think that might be a clue to it. It's also interesting that as far as I can tell online with whatever documents have been uploaded, is that the original tie didn't supply film to BP TV Joss.
So that would have come from elsewhere.
Yeah, that was I want to think. Yeah, go on. Sorry, Tim.
No, go on, Steve.
No, I just it was just dealing with what the origin of those film cans were, but that might lead into a whole different discussion. I don't want to derail you, so go on.
We haven't got 4 hours. No, I just I just wonder if you know, this was a chance find, a luck find, while he was perhaps doing a tour of Nigerian stations or something, and yet the perhaps the reason that this TIEA company was set up was for something else. I just wonder if that's the case.
It's possible. I mean, the thing about it is, as well, if he set up TIA in order to try and get, you know, to try and be allowed into places where TIE had been working, that doesn't necessarily mean that by the time TIA's operational, it's not going to get him into other places as well because of the reputation that he's building himself. So it works both ways. He gets the best of both worlds. One thing that's my understanding, going back to the subject of Enemy of the World and the Web of Fear, my understanding of it is that whenever they were found, whether that was late 2010, early 2011, or maybe even later in 2011 or even in 2012, who knows?
It's telling that they were very hesitant to reveal when that was in the Doctor Who magazine article, by the way.
Sure. Yeah. Oh, and with me as well. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But he did tell me that all would be revealed about that and everything else in the fullness of time. Mm-hmm. So you can only imagine by comments like that that there's still more to come, even if it's only the information about when and, you know, exactly when these things were found. But it's my understanding that they were still abroad until they were handed over to the BBC. I don't know if that's true, but that's my understanding. People seem to think that he was holding them in Wigan or wherever, somewhere near where he lives, and that, you know, that Paul Venezis was up there looking at them and, you know, telling the BBC, he's got what he says he's got. Well, it's my understanding that, although that may have happened, that only happened immediately prior to them being handed over to the BBC officially, and that up until very shortly before that, they were out of the country. So going back to this, you know, the point I was making about how frustrating it might have been for him, we talk about him walking into an archive in, let's say, March 2011, and seeing the Web of Fear and the Enemy of the World on the shelf. And, you know, the simple explanation he gave is, and he said, right, we need those, can we have them? And the people at the archive said yes. It may very well be that actually the process of them saying yes took 18 months to 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, maybe. Well, it's interesting you say, you keep mentioning March 2011. I think it was March 2011 where there was a chap on Rhubarb's forum, I think it was, who
That's
said,
right.
I work for a large international logistics company, and we've just taken in a box that had, the owner said it collected Doctor Who episodes from Nigeria via Zambia, I think, or vice versa. So there's these other shipments as well. There's the famous 3 tons of proof shipment. what the hell was on that?
Well, if indeed anything at all, because it was just a request, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So we don't actually know whether that shipment ever actually took place.
Ooh,
no, we don't.
No. And I'll tell you one thing about that March 2011 post on Rhubarb's. Whether I've got the wrong end of the stick or whether Phil was being disingenuous when he made that comment, assuming that comment was Phil, or whether the guy who reported it onto the forum has misremembered or misreported it, I shouldn't say I'm told. My understanding again, because I can't actually remember whether and whom it was who may have said it. But it was my understanding there was no actual Doctor Who on that shipment. Which is why it's
I don't know.
Yeah, which is why belief that Enemy and Webb came back into this country later. I get the impression that Phil, if it was indeed Phil, was saying, actually, oh, there's a ton of stuff on here and there will be Doctor Who, as opposed to there is Doctor Who among it. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, I don't know about that.
I don't know.
He could have said Dr. Finlay and been misheard.
No, but do you know what I mean? Sometimes if somebody says something, you sometimes mistake the sort of verb part of the sentence or the adjective part of the sentence. Do you know what I'm saying? You'll hear shipment and Doctor Who, and if he says, there's Doctor Who, or he may even have said, there's Doctor Who in there, and not meaning literally in that box, but in amongst the stuff that that box is a part of, there's Doctor Who, and that Doctor Who has still to come over yet, because, you know, the Nigerians are still in the process of saying yes. Do you know what I mean? There is a case sometimes for, and this will become important in a minute, I suppose, because we'll talk about something else in a minute, about where the 90 came from, but there's a case sometimes that people don't always choose their words especially carefully, or sometimes think they've chosen them carefully enough and actually could probably have chosen them more carefully after all, or that people, when they're listening to things, will sometimes, you know, focus on certain buzzwords in a sentence and misunderstand the overall meaning of the sentence. Do you know what I'm saying? So it's my understanding there was no actual Doctor Who in that shipment, and that Enemy and Webb came over later, even if I'm wrong about that. But what we'll talk about now, I guess, is the 90 and where the 90 rumour came from, and the various things about that have been said about it in the meantime. Tim, as our Mr. Forum of the night. In a nutshell, what is the source of the 90? Who is supposed to have said what and where, as it were?
Get me to name names.
I'm not talking about anybody else but Phil. I'm not asking you to talk about any other name but Phil.
First of all, it is an enormous... I've said this often. It must be an enormous coincidence that when Paul's claim to have done it, but it appears in Wiped by Richard Molesworth, that these BBC clearances, these sales sheets that were found in the late 2000s, they tell us where, or rather the records that were found tell us the last resting places, if you like, the last sales places of 90 of the then 106 missing episodes. And it just so happens that this list of episodes is almost to the episode the same list as the 90 that had been rumoured found when Ian Levine tweeted a list.
Yeah.
So that strikes me repeatedly as either a bloody great coincidence, or they just walked into these archives and they were all sat there exactly where they thought they would be. But we know that not to be the case. because Phil has said, and I can't see how he would, why he would lie about this, is that the Nigerian episodes, is that the nine that were found were the only ones that were there. So do you see what I mean? That must be a huge...
Just to break in, the reason why that's important is because if he'd have found everything that was supposed to be there, it should have been four missing stories complete.
Yep.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Abominable Snowman.
Wheel in Space.
Enemy of the World. Yeah, Wheel in Space.
I think it was Fury from the Deep, wasn't it? Was it Wheel in Space or was it Fury? I thought it was Fury for some reason.
Yeah, Wheel in Space.
Wheel in Space, because there is this remarkably persistent detail that was seemed to have been knocking around before it got on the forums, that there were a couple of Wheel in Space episodes found. Now, who knows where that came from, but it is remarkably persistent. So I'm a bit of a believer in the two Wheel in Space, and the reason he said there was no more there is because he fancied his chances perhaps of finding more elsewhere. So why hand over two when you can hand over four?
Yeah. And you know what? In a nutshell, that's perhaps one of the things, you know, I'm not saying that is the major reason for the delays or what have you, as we're calling them delays, but it's my contention that assuming there is more, that Phil would like there to be one big announcement of everything. Because that's the way you get your name in the history books, right?
Yep.
If you hand them back bit by bit, your name will gradually become associated as the guy who hands back missing episodes. But if you hand back, you know, let's say for the sake of argument, 90 missing episodes all in one go, then, you know, bugger me, but half of Doctor Who fandom's actually fainted. That's perhaps, you know, when I said he was strong-willed, perhaps that's one of the things he was being strong-willed about, that whatever he finds, he wants to announce it all in one go. And yeah, as a minor point of that, if you find some things incomplete, you're not going to want to make that announcement until you're absolutely damn sure that, you know, you're not going to later on down the line turn up the bits that are missing. Sorry, Tim, you go ahead. You were about to say.
No, well, I'll get back to another point about the 90 later and perhaps where it came from. But isn't it a bizarre situation that we're in now? That if tomorrow they announced that they'd found, I don't know, two episodes of Reign of Terror and three episodes of Galaxy 4, that a large proportion of people on the forums, not in fandom, would be unhappy.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yep.
There's an expectation there, isn't there?
Well, yeah, this is another thing. This is, right, let's get into it, because, you know, this is perhaps the most contentious bit and perhaps the bit that most needs ironing out. BBC Worldwide, BBC Cardiff, Phil Morris and Tia. How does it all marry together? Who's the most important partner? And are they happy bedfellows? Right, here's the thing. BBC Worldwide have just been responsible for selling and making a lot of money from the fans these animated versions of Reign of Terror and, you know, the invasion earlier on, the Ice Warriors, the 10th Planet, and so on. As a company, it doesn't look especially good on them if they then turn around and say, right, and now you're going to have to pay for those stories all over again because we've got the actual episodes. That's only a really minor point. I think the major point is, this original 90 story is, according to the forums, and, you know, I don't think we have a quote on this from anybody who was involved in any of this, but according to the forums, this 90 was supposed to have been said by Phil to the BBC, or said by Paul to the BBC as being what Phil had told him. And yet we've got this list of 90 episodes, which is the last resting places according to the records. So do any of us actually believe that Phil Morris turned around to the BBC and said, yeah, those records, they're absolutely perfectly correct, and that's what I found. Ta-da! Or that Paul said, you know, that list of 90 episodes I gave you and where they should be, that's where they all were, and that's what Phil found. Ta-da! Or do we think that somewhere along the line, and I'm not ruling out that Phil or Paul may have told the BBC, and I'll come to the reason why perhaps in a minute, as long as we don't forget. I'm not ruling out that Phil or Paul may have said to the BBC that there is more to come than the 9 that we have simply had. But the actual 90, do we think that actual 90 is probably just that list?
Hello?
Well, here's the thing.
Yeah, go on.
The 90 on the clearance records and the rumored 90 are not found in the same locations. And there's this whole thing, and it was quite a detailed rumor about, as I've heard from a number of people, about Power of the Daleks, and 10th Planet Episode 4, and the Season 3 Hartnells being found in Africa. And the 10th Planet and Power of the Daleks, the story went that they were found in a place where they weren't broadcast, and therefore they had no reason to be there.
Yeah.
And so this wouldn't appear on the BBC clearance records or sales sheets, whatever they're called. And so while the numbers match, there was a very, very persistent and consistent story that these stories were found in Africa. And then there's the second half. And so when you take into account that the rumours say that seasons 1 and 2 were found in Ethiopia and season 3, of which the infamous DJ BBC Wiltshire email says there were 2 copies of The Massacre found. You know, we get to 40-ish, 40-odd. And then the rumours seem to say after that that there was this enormous find in Hong Kong, which is really problematical for me. So, do you know what I mean? You sort of end up running in circles with this because you have the coincidence of the 90 on the clearance sheets and then these rumours which don't agree on the locations, but the episodes are almost the same.
Is it possible? So, is it possible that the rumours that 90 had been found were actually based upon the two ideas that some had been found and that 90 was a number that was quoted, and that somewhere the rumour conflated the number 90 with the fact that there had been a discovery, put the two together, and so the rumour escapes that 90 have been found, when actually, and I'm not saying it was just the 9 or whatever, but somewhere along the line, between that 9 that was found and the 90 that were on this list of things that might be found, somewhere in between is where the truth probably lies.
Yeah, and another thing is we have these marvellous resources to hand now. We have 2 editions of Wiped. We have we have the Gallifrey-based website, John Preddle's website, Broadcast, which tells you where every single episode of Doctor Who was broadcast. And so a lot of armchair detectives, of which I am guilty of being one, will rely on these resources. And I tend to suspect that a narrative has been sort of calculated by working out, well, if that happened, if that was broadcast there, but it was sent over there. And I just wonder if in the very early days of the rumours, 2011, 2012, when these resources were available, that there's a little bit of armchair detective work by some people very close to what was going on, saying, well, I heard 90 was found. This is where it probably happened.
Yeah.
And then maybe that solidified over time. I don't know. I'll be delighted to be proven wrong on that. But it just seems to make sense to me.
That's one of the big things in all of this, actually, is somewhere between rumour and somewhere between, you know, things we do know about, somewhere in between, and we don't know, you know, which end it's closest to being. But the truth, we don't know the truth about almost any of this. And all, and I think that's one of the biggest problems, is when you have only heard rumours, and I think this is more for the people who are feeling disappointed or angry or whatever, in some way emotional about the fact that we've not heard anything else yet. I think this is the reason why, is that almost everything that we've heard is hearsay or speculation or conjecture or rumour.
Yeah.
None of it is absolutely solid fact. There's very few absolutely solid facts about any of this story. So, and it very quickly becomes the case, I think both of you will probably agree, especially given what you've just said, Tim, very quickly can become the case that somebody can speculate on the potential provenance or reason for a particular rumour, and because nobody else has got a better idea, and because it seems to fit in with the other rumours they've heard rather than facts they know, those rumours, those bits of speculation very quickly become cemented in people's minds. And that, in many ways, is what affects how people feel about it.
Hmm. Yeah. But just to sort of completely contradict what I said before, if you like.
Go on, yeah.
People aren't morons, and in general, and we're talking about the most rumour-hardened, battle-scarred bunch of fans in terms of rumours. And these rumours were everywhere,
yeah.
And everyone has heard the names attached to them. You know, prominent new series writers, the editor of Doctor Who magazine, who was quite vocal recently about his new perspective on it, if you like.
Yeah.
But these rumours were everywhere. And you'd think when these rumours were being passed around that one or two people would have said, wait a minute, are you sure? We've gone for this before. Do you know what I mean? So
that's what I mean about smoke and fire, though, is if you know that there is fire, then the amount of smoke might deceive you about how much fire, and you may get just a little bit too excited about the fact that somebody's walking along with a lit match in his hand. Do you know what I mean? It can.
Yeah. Well, I just think. Sorry, Stephen, go on.
I was going to say, you know, talking about how long these things have been going on and the rumors and everything, but I do know that I'm not going to name names just because I don't want to throw them into this, but I know of people who learned about 90 episodes in 2010. So it was well before the Omni rumor, quote unquote, really took hold in like 2012, 2013. So it's that little nugget that sort of keeps me thinking, like, how long has this been going on, and how, you know, how fevered was it amongst a smaller circle of people perhaps back then before it sort of got exposed to a wider audience?
Do you know that reason? If that's true, that the number 90 had been mentioned as far back as 2010, and let's say he didn't recover Enemy or Web until 2011, then that kind of points out to me that the 90 is the list of last resting places rather than the actual number of things he was recovered. It is possible. It's entirely possible that he went to those last resting places. And, you know, he said in 2005 on the Missing Episodes forum, the Africans don't seem to throw anything away. It's possible he went to those last resting places and found everything that was on the list where it was supposed to be. It's not likely.
Funnily enough, in that there was a Radio 4 documentary in 2009 or 10.
Yes.
Where he talked about all this stuff, and he actually said something along the lines of, I went to where the paperwork said it would be, but you'd very often find, or I would always find, that these things had moved
on. Yes, yes, yes.
Which, again, sort of goes against the last resting places, but it's a hell of a question.
Yeah, but that's what I mean. The number might have been the episodes that were listed as having last resting places, and there's Phil... And the thing about if something's not in the place where it was supposed to be, but has moved on as opposed to been destroyed, then you just look in the next place, and potentially you keep going until there is no next place and you have to give up. But as long as there are next places, you know, I'm not saying he did find any or all of these things, but the potential is that if he's the kind of guy who gets his nose down, gets his head down, does the groundwork, you know, on the groundwork, not rather than just the paperwork, is the kind of guy who will ferret these things out if they're there to be ferreted out.
Mm.
That's how I always saw him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Stephen, we've not asked you anything for ages apart from that last little nugget. Okay, here's the thing about the 90 and about whether Phil told it to the BBC or whether Paul told it to the BBC and about whether that's therefore what got out. That did get out. And, you know, whether it was famous person X or famous person Y or not famous person Z who leaked it, and for what it's worth, I think the original source of the leaks was not famous person Z as opposed to famous persons X and Y. I think they were a little bit further down the line. But regardless of who it was who leaked it, it leaked. Somehow it leaked. And we have, And our first instance of this is, I think, March 2013, which is about the time of DWO and about the time of Bleeding Cool, give or take a couple of months or whatever. But it's the early 2013 period, which is when a lot of things seem to happen. This leaked Radio Wiltshire DJ email, which says a lot of things about what Phil's supposed to have found. And it also says a lot of things about what kind of a person, pardon me, Phil is supposed to be. And what strikes me about that is that an awful lot of fandom have based an awful lot of their belief systems and now an awful lot of their disbelief systems on the contents of that email and similar such emails that were passing around at the same time. For example, the first couple of emails I got from people who'd heard the story was, oh God, guess what I've heard? You know, this madman has found X amount of episodes in Y place and has spare copies of Z and all this kind of stuff. And nobody knows whether he's going to give them back because he's mad and he's suffering from PTSD and all these kinds of things. And it's obvious that these people's emails to me that I was seeing at this time were inspired by, based upon, or completely, you know, having read the contents of the Radio Wiltshire email, or the Radio Wiltshire email was another one of those emails and they were all based on something that somebody else had said somewhere else. But because what I'm saying here is that all those emails that I was getting from a variety of different people were all saying essentially exactly the same thing, that whole leak came from one person. Do you know what I'm saying? Whatever Yes. information got out in the first place is what has sort of branched out and ballooned out into all these different rumours. And whatever variation on the rumour you hear, it always includes certain specific things that obviously came out of this original rumour. And so my point to you, and I guess to Stephen first, is that being the case, even if some of that is true, a lot of that will be the interpretation of the person who is the person who leaked that rumour. And some of it may even be his embellishment and not even be remotely true at all. And just as a quick example before I ask your opinion, Phil being mad and the PTSD. You know, he had this kidnapping incident in 2006, 8, 9 years later, whatever, having done all this work in Africa, having been involved in some particularly tricky negotiations, presumably, to get into these places and get this stuff. PTSD is not an issue. Madness is not something that Phil Morris suffers from. That is something that has been added in the telling by whomsoever it was who leaked it. Stephen, opinion on what I've just said?
I've had limited contact with Phil. You've had more, obviously, having met him, JR, and interviewed him for, you know, two-thirds of an hour, basically, at the celebration event in November 2013. I've never gotten the impression that he's mad and crazy and everything. I think people see his, perhaps his... his penmanship on internet forums and on Twitter, you know, lack
I was gonna ask Tim about
or,
that. Yeah.
Or too much punctuation is perhaps, you know, come on. I know of people who have no idea, you know, just do not care about that thing. And so we should never read into how someone tweets as a, you know, an insight into their mind.
Especially when they're typing on a phone, probably.
That too, yeah. You know? I don't think he's a nuts and obsessive compulsive. I mean, yes, he did have that, you know, a situation that I can't imagine anybody being in, being held hostage for a couple of days in Nigeria on an oil base, and then all the business that led after that. You know, I think he only got a settlement from the company, I think, maybe a year after that. So who knows what had been going on in between then. And I don't know where the sort of the mad, crazy fan element came. Perhaps because it might have just come out as, you know, this might where the rumors start, because I do think it was like, we know where 90 episodes are, now we have to go find them. I think eventually turned into, this guy has 90 episodes, he's not giving them back. And then we had to sort of craft reasons. Well, he must be like this sort of James Bond-like villain at the top of this castle or something with a vault full of Doctor Who episodes. Yeah. So he must be crazy, stroking a cat and wearing an eye patch and everything like that.
Here in his past, he suffered from PTSD, so that must explain why he's, you know, got these 90 episodes hidden away now, because he can't bear to part with them because of his PTSD. this
exactly
sort of thing.
I mean, to be fair, or not fair, I don't know, is that, you know, a couple times I've reached out to him and said, would you like to come on Radio Free Scarl? Let's do an interview. Let's talk about what the state is of these things are. And he's like, jumped back sometimes and says, yeah, absolutely, let's do it. And okay, when do you want to do it? Oh, maybe 2 or 3 weeks from now or something like that. And then I'd reach out a couple times in between then and nothing. And this happened a couple times and I've since given up, really. So there still is, you know, but I don't think that's down to a mental illness or anything like that. I think it's just changing priorities and perhaps rethinking of where he's going. Because, you know, as we all have seen, he has taken to, you know, at times weird, kind of like explosions of interactiveness on Twitter and on forums and on Facebook groups and everything, and then sort of pulling the reins back again and then not really saying much apart from retweeting inspirational tweets here and there. And then jumping on again and doing the same thing. I just get the sense that he wants to talk about this and wants to tell people about things, but he just can't be for legal reasons and reasons that are, you know, not everything is tied up yet and it's not right for him to talk about these things yet, but he can just kind of tell that he wants to, you know?
Well, yeah. Okay, Tim, you know, what's your take on that and what is your take on Phil's online personality, social media and such?
I wish he'd get off it. he doesn't do himself any favors, does he, to
do
be
you
fair.
Think though that he deliberately goes out of his way to wind people up, or do you think he maybe
to a degree
do you think so
to a degree
I think he yeah I think actually I think probably you're right now I think maybe he yeah. started out with the best of intentions, and when it didn't go the way he assumed it would go, things got out of hand, and you know, maybe you ended up then in a situation whereby, you know, he was thinking, to hell with it, I'll tweet this.
Yeah, I mean, he obviously well, if I was in his shoes as someone who's not accustomed to you know, the politics of Doctor Who fandom, or indeed what some of the forums can be like. And I'm not blaming the forums, but he obviously reads this stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And he obviously can't stop reading it. And I guess he's probably a little bit surprised, saying, hang on a minute.
Yeah.
I've found 9 episodes of Doctor Who here. And he's, I suspect he's probably taken a little bit aback by some of the attitude that he gets, but at the same time, he doesn't help calling people out. He doesn't help himself. He seems to be pursuing a bit of a vendetta or an agenda against Ian Levine. I just wish he'd stop.
Yeah. Talking of Ian Levine, do you think? Because I'm not sure where this all started, but I swear Ian Levine started that, and Phil's stuff since then has been mostly retaliatory. But is that the case, or was it going on before? Because I really can't get my head around that. Because a lot of that started when I was off the forums and off the social media myself, so I missed a lot of it.
Well, if you listen back to the Reign of Terror commentary that Phil Morris and Paul Venezis did, there's a moment where Toby Haydock says, and we mustn't forget the huge contribution made to missing episodes by Ian Levine. And both Paul and Phil, but yes, of course. And yet, look at where we are now. Look, my reading of it is that Ian Levine lost his patience. As he often does. Phil's wife piped up in defense and made a terminological inexactitude, shall we say, about what actually happened.
Which, let's be honest about it, was probably not a deliberate lie, but just a misunderstanding on her part.
Absolutely. It's a woman defending her husband.
Yeah.
And then when Ian's sort of guns fell on her, I think that was probably it, as far as Phil was concerned. That's my reading of it. And since then, it's just been this two incredibly strong-minded, stubborn individuals who are more sort of content to get one over on each other than perhaps appreciate how both of them are being perceived in the wider view. And do either of them care? I don't know. But it does, unfortunately, it is taking the gloss off both of them. isn't it, really? It's just a shame, really, that they can't just take it privately and agree to disagree, or... It's just a shame, because it's just taken a bit of a gloss of two heroes, really, who have made these TV shows available for us all to watch. We're all crazy about the show, and yet, you know, they're just tearing strips off each other at every opportunity. You know, and it's sad.
It is sad. And the mad thing is, in 20 years' time, you know, the wiped Volume 30 will only record that Ian found such and such, and Phil found such and such, and none of the Twitter conversations will be in there. So this will all be forgotten in time. But you're right, it does take the shine off it a bit. Stephen, what do you think? Mm. Have you seen much of this?
Only on Twitter and the like, and it is unfortunate. And every time it happens, I go, oh, just stay out. You know, just stay out of this. This doesn't, I mean, it's you know, back when November of 2013, when Phil was being invited to, you know, the Doctor Who celebration and just held up as a hero, and everyone's come up and thanking him and everything. And now I don't think if he showed up at a similar event, would he get the same sort of reaction from people? I think now that hero shine is sort of worn off a little bit, and he's back to being perceived as an angry hoarder at this point, demanding change at the BBC and the way they run Doctor Who now, before he hands Doctor Who episodes back. I mean, that probably, I hope, isn't his intention, but that's almost kind of what it's coming across as.
Speaking of Twitters and angry hoarders, we've still got so much stuff to get through. I don't think we're going to get through everything. It'll take us about another hour and a half. But speaking about Twitters and angry hoarders, speaking about the Joanne incident, which was the first Joanne incident where I believe it was that Ian claimed that Phil had had some paperwork that he'd picked up at Ian's, and Joanne had tweeted something along the lines of, "Don't be silly, he's never been," or whatever, something along those lines. And it transpired that Phil had picked up those papers from Ian's, albeit that they were Richard Molesworth's papers or something. But Joanne Morris ended up, like Stephen says, defending her husband, probably slightly emotional, didn't think to ask her husband, just assumed it wasn't true, and said it on Twitter. Well, 2 weeks ago, as we record this, there was another Twitter incident. And in amongst the tweets, I think there's something in there that people have kind of missed on account of the fact that their focus was elsewhere, that I think is actually absolutely vital to our understanding of this. So I'll tell you what I mean, and then, you know, let's see what we think about it. But Phil had been on Twitter again. He tweeted something about the new series. It was not a provocative tweet in terms of the missing episode stories. It could possibly be seen as a provocative tweet in terms of how he feels about, you know, Cardiff and the Doctor Who production office. But nevertheless, as is always the case when this happens, he makes a relatively innocuous tweet. All of a sudden, there's a barrage of tweets from people saying, "Where's the rest of the missing episodes? What have you done with them? Where have you got them?" etc. Very soon descends into a slanging match. Joanne comes on Twitter and says things like, I have kept quiet for so long, but I can no longer stand by and watch you destroy a good man's name and his company," talking to the various people who are making accusations and criticisms, right? And, you know...
Was one of those me?
but possibly, but, you know, when you're on Twitter, it's difficult, especially when you get in a barrage of criticisms. It's difficult to work out which ones are actually criticisms and which ones are just genuinely meant questions. It just becomes a barrage of white noise, which all seems to be aimed at you.
Yeah.
But one of the things that Joanne said in one tweet is, "What makes me laugh is you think you know everything, and it's okay to destroy people's characters with no regards for your actions." And the next tweet is, "All those who criticise and judge are achieving is the delay of returning any lost TV shows." Now, what I think she... No, it's not even what I think. It is my firm belief that the way that is phrased is not what she actually meant to say. I don't think what she's saying is, for 1 minute, "You fans talking, you know, leveling accusations at my husband on Twitter are what is causing the delays." I think the important thing is to take half of one tweet and half of the tweet that follows it and put those two together as the conjunction and take out the stuff about fans that comes in between at the end of the first tweet and at the start of the second tweet. And then what you're left with is this. What makes me laugh is you think you know everything, but what is being achieved is the delay of returning any lost TV shows. In other words, whatever delay there is in returning lost TV shows is not what you think it is and not what you're accusing my husband about. And the sense I got from that is that whatever the delays are, Phil is not responsible for them. He's as helpless as the rest of us. And what Joanne is trying to demonstrate is that her husband is not the villain. And I'm not going to say he's the victim in this, but I'm just going to say that, you know, because he can't be the victim because of the tweets that he does make, right? He knows what he's tweeting, so he could have settled things in a different way had he wanted to. But what I'm saying is, whatever these delays are, and I will get to talk about the word delays in a second, whatever is the object between Enemy and Web having come out nearly 2 years ago and nothing else having come out yet, if other things do exist, I don't think the object is Phil. Or rather, I don't think it's any one thing. You know, people keep saying, oh, you say it's this, you say it's that. Because I believe there's a large combination of factors that is causing the situation to be the situation that we're in the middle of now. But one of those things is, I don't think Phil is saying, right, you're not having anything more because I'm being ignorant, because you're being ignorant to me. I don't think that is in any way a factor. Whether it be negotiations, whether it be because, like I believe is probably the case in the example of Enemy and Web, there are still things out there and he knows where they are, but he's still waiting upon that yes or whatever, or whether there are any number of other factors, I don't think it is. I do not believe that it is Phil himself who is standing in the way and saying, no, not until I say so. I think there's certainly an element of him saying, not until I say so. But the reason he's saying, not until I say so, is because of the other factors that are putting him on the spot in the middle. Right, okay, that was another long speech by me. But Tim, what do you think? Do you think that Phil, all of what I've said, what do you think?
I think it's impossible to really put your finger on it. I think there's enough doubt and there's enough unknown, and we've talked about things like potential financial financial negotiations. I listened back to a podcast from 2013 where they were saying it was all about the financial. And that still could be in play today. Like I said earlier, maybe there are arrangements going on with Archives, and he just wants to finish that job, and who can blame him, really? And then he can say, I've done my bit, that's what I've got, over to the next guy. I think it's quite difficult to sort of assess what the reason is, but I also think there's enough reasonable doubts around to say, hey, it might not just be Phil. Because we're dealing with enormously complex arrangements here, aren't we?
I'll tell you something else. I would guess. Yeah. I'll tell you something else in a second that I don't think I've ever said publicly yet. But Stephen, you know, what do you think? Do you think this situation is of Phil's making, or whether he's kind of caught in the middle of it a bit?
I think it situation almost kind of reminds me of the last shot of Raiders of the Lost Ark, and that they find the Ark and it's sort of brought back into the U.S. government, and it's sort of wheeled into a giant storehouse and kind of forgotten a little bit. And I'm not saying that's a direct representation of what's happening here, but I think once you get the BBC and large public trusts and lawyers and negotiators involved, these things take forever.
Yeah,
it's not as cut and dry as all that. It's not going to show up with a big truck on one day and sort of in the afternoon, it's just, you know, have something hammered out by the afternoon. So yeah, I imagine there probably are at some point. I mean, at some point, I think it's pretty much acknowledged that someone at Cardiff knew what was going on, because I just don't think that Stephen Moffat would have placed so many deliberate in jokes and references to the Web of Fear in his 2012 Christmas special if he hadn't known that the Web of Fear was coming back at some point, you know? So I do think that there's been some entanglement going on, not of Phil's making, but I think of somewhere along the line with perhaps BBC Worldwide and Phil himself. So I don't think.
I referred to this earlier on. Do you think it's possible that internal BBC squabbles might be not necessarily, I'm saying only, you know, in terms of it being a fraction of the overall picture, but internal BBC squabbles to blame for the fact that we still don't know what's going on?
Absolutely. I mean, look, the recent Doctor Who magazine talks about the Underwater Menace and how the DVD for that has been abandoned. The added material, the commentaries, the everything but the reconstruction of the missing episodes 1 and 4 are all done, and it's not being released. And that's purely almost down to internal BBC squabbles. I mean, a lot of people who, like Steve Roberts and Ed Stradling, say that there's just not anyone there who cares about Doctor Who on DVD anymore. You know, those people have just sort of moved on. There's been sort of an organizational shift, and those people that used to care about such things no longer give a damn. And so, therefore, this sort of stuff is just sort of left in between. And you look at how...
Just to cut you off just for a slight second, that is a great analogy, because that DVD could have been out 2 years ago, and we still don't know if we're going to get it at all now. So that's a brilliant analogy, Carry on, sorry.
That's a small little subsection of what kind of things we're dealing with here. You know, it's old TV... perhaps some people at the BBC don't quite see the value of having old TV, especially when they've been working so long and so hard to set up this new online BBC store, that they're more concentrated on getting money and focusing things on selling the new stuff that they've been making in the past couple of years, as opposed to something that these horror old television shows from 1967, who cares about that? You know, what marketability is coming out of that? So I think there is sort of this sort of disconnect and miscommunication between the various parties, I think, that are really stalling things, or at least keeping things off the back, you know, the front burner, I think. You know, whatever, we'll deal with that later. We have bigger things to fry right now, you know?
So, and this is bringing us more or less full circle, so I think we'll kind of bring it to a close more or less with this, but I've kept mentioning the word delay, and... this is the thing. Fans on the forums, fans on Twitter who are following this, fans are reading bits and pieces about it in Doctor Who magazine. Fans who have not been reading anything about it at all, but heard that there were rumours that there were more and bought the Web of Fear and Enemy of the World 18 months ago and are still wondering now what's going on. Because of the fact that there were rumours before, we've kind of become conditioned to see the last 18 months to 2 years as a delay of some kind. When the truth is, it's probably not a delay. Nothing has changed, really, in the last 2 years, except for, behind the scenes, people have been carrying on doing what they're doing. Phil has still been out there looking for episodes. And presumably, there are certain people within the BBC, and maybe if there were squabbles between Cardiff and Worldwide, maybe departments have stopped talking to one another, and maybe now there's a situation whereby only a very few people within the BBC know what's going on, and most of the other people in the BBC are blissfully unaware of it. You know, possibly. I'm not putting this forward as, you know, my speculation as to what I think is actually happening. I'm saying all these kinds of things are possible, but we've become conditioned to seeing the last 2 years as some kind of a delay. When actually, like I think I said right at the very start, I wasn't expecting anything in all that time. So I don't see it as a delay. I just see it as the period in between what happened then and what happens next. And, you know, while you're in the period in between those two things, you've just got to ride it out, because what happens next doesn't happen until it happens. You can't... There's no reason... There's nothing to be gained by becoming exasperated about being in between point A and point B until you arrive at point B. Tim, what do you think? The word delay, is it the wrong word?
No, I don't think so, because we don't know the what the original plan was. I mean, if Enemy of Webb were sort of prized out of his hands or handed over reluctantly to give the fans something to celebrate, we don't know what the timescale is. We don't know what the situation is with the BBC. He's obviously pursuing a little bit of agenda against Cardiff and the new show, but at the same time, he's reassured us at some point that he's in a perfectly healthy relationship with the BBC. So,
in fact, he turned up on BBC Breakfast the other month. Yeah. So you know, yeah, he's obviously right. Got some kind of a relationship with the BBC,
and on Five Live. So somebody at the BBC is saying he's the guy to go to.
Yeah.
So we can't really say there's a delay, but what's happened is because of these leaks and rumours and I don't know how to put it politely, but quite a lot of false stuff that has
been
conjecture solidified into fact on the forums, I think there is a heightened sense of expectation that probably isn't down to Phil.
Absolutely.
So delays, I don't think so. Having said that, I think there was a lot, I don't know why exactly, but, you know, having had my ear to the ground, I think there was an expectation that there would be further developments in 2014 from a lot of people. So I don't know. I think delays is an unknown because we don't know what the original plan was. There has certainly been said many times, at least 3-4 times that I can remember, that we will be told everything.
Well, exactly. I've actually got a couple of those quotes up in front of me now, and I was going to finish the podcast with those as because, you know, I would contend that they're a positive note to finish on. So shall I do that? Shall I read them out and we'll just say a couple of words about them and call it a night?
Go for it.
On the Africa Progress thread on the Missing Episodes forum, back in February 2009, Phil Morris said, "Gentlemen, please, when I have completed my mission, all details will be revealed and the story will be told in words and pictures and video so everyone can see for themselves." He says the story isn't quite finished yet, but it is genuine, well-organized, and under the aegis of the copyright holders, things are happening. I think the important thing there, and, you know, let's be honest, that was 6 years ago. Things can change in 6 years. But the important thing is that Phil went into this with the full intention of revealing everything. Words, pictures, video, he says. All details will be revealed. He went into this process with the full intention of revealing everything. So, you know, all these accusations that he's mad, he's off his rocker, he's holding the episodes, he's keeping things back. Why would somebody who in 2009... was fully intending to reveal every last detail of what he was up to, why would that person, 5 years later, turn around and be this mad, mysterious hoarder? He just wouldn't, would he?
Mm-hmm. No.
No.
No, you're right.
And so the other quote is Paul Vanezis, and this is also on the Missing Episodes forum, and this is in December the 22nd of 2013. So this is after the release of Enemy and Web on iTunes and after Enemy of the Worlds out on DVD. And he says, "As myself and Philip have said in the past, the whole story will be told when the job is done, and the job is not yet done." Which I think, taken in isolation, and like I say, things can change, but that's much more recent than the first one. In isolation, that would pretty much seem to confirm most of the feelings we've been having in this podcast, I'd have said. You agree?
I think so. And it comes from, you know, someone as notable and trustworthy, I think, as Paul Vanezis, who I think is not one to be hoodwinked into believing things and has certainly been behind a lot of the search. So, yeah, that's a telling quote, especially at the time at which it was told, you know, just over a year and a half ago. It's hopeful.
And of course, when I say the word delays is the wrong word, there's Paul Vanezis saying the job is not yet done. So whatever period we're in the middle of at the moment, we are in the middle of a period. And so I guess if there's one thing I'd like to say about the Missing Episodes, it's be patient. Don't be frustrated, because it's a wasted emotion. There's nothing to be frustrated about. You either will have more episodes or you won't, but there's no point in worrying about it because there's nothing you can do to affect the outcome. You know, by worrying about whether the massacre really exists, you can't make the massacre exist, just as you can't make it not exist. It either does or it doesn't, but you're worrying about it is not going to have any effect on that. So, you know, this is what I promised myself I would do 18 months ago, and I've not been able to quite manage it, but I think I've managed it better than some people. But just chill out and just let things be. I think that's my... And follow the story, sure, but getting angry about it, getting frustrated about it, getting impatient about it isn't going to do anybody any good. Tim, how do you feel?
Yeah, I have been prone to bouts of frustration, not really at waiting, but at some of the social media stuff.
Yeah, fair enough.
I may or may not have told Phil to shut up the other day on Twitter. I stopped winding everybody up. I'm quite happy to wait. Even though I have stronger theories than others and stronger beliefs about what has been found, even when I knew enemy web had been found, it wasn't real. It wasn't real until about 2 weeks after I had them on iTunes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So I'm quite comfortable being logical about it, but I don't have the emotion about the episodes until I see them. And I don't want to say believe it when you see it, but I'll believe it when I see it.
Yeah, yeah.
At the same time, I do wish he would just pipe down on Twitter a little bit, disengage, stop reading places where he's only going to get a bad rep or a bad name, because everyone gets a bad name. But yeah, I'm happy to be patient. I'm happy to wait for as long as it takes. But I just wish he'd pipe down a little bit sometimes.
How about you, Stephen?
I'm not going to say I'm happy to be patient, but I am being patient. But I'm not. Yeah, I realize that I'm not going to get anywhere by not being patient. I mean, I'd like a conclusion to this, if indeed it is a thing that is to be concluded. But I will wait and watch with a keen interest in the various developments that have that are occurring.
You know, we never even got around to talking about Marco Polo. I think that's the first time I've actually mentioned those two words in the entire podcast. Yeah.
Are people saying that's been found?
Yeah. You know what I mean? That this podcast could have gone on for twice the length and we still wouldn't have got down to the bottom of everything. But thanks for joining me, both of you. And, you know, if there's one thing that I think is a really positive in all of this, is that 2 years ago, we lived in a world in which the power of the Daleks was missing, presumed never to be seen again by human eyes. We are currently living in a world where the power of the Daleks may or may not exist, but nobody's sure either direction. And if nothing else, the fact that it may exist when 2 years ago we didn't think it could possibly exist, it's got to be at least a bit of a positive.
Mm-hmm. I think so.
So until next week then, I was JR.
I was Stephen.
I was Tim.
And we'll speak again soon. That was, my God, we could really literally have talked for another 2 hours, couldn't we?
Yeah, but we would be rehashing stuff.
I was watching the clip thinking, Stephen's crying!
No, it's fine, it's fair enough, that's what we were there for, but, you know, it just didn't strike me till the end. We never even mentioned Marco Polo, Web of Fear, screening,
and my Skype,
all these other things. We could have talked till 11 o'clock tonight.